The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Come on in, everybody. It is hour number two on day number one of the month of April. Look at here. April actually got here. After a month of March that seemed to go on for a year and a half all by itself, we are in April. The calendar pages do turn. The clock does tick. And even as uncertain as these times are, every tick of the clock, every page of the calendar gets us closer to a day when blissful, blessed normalcy will return. No one can tell you when that's going to be. No government official, no health expert, but we will get through it. And helping us in this path forward and helping us to emerge stronger and better and preserving as best we can the things that are at risk, that's what leaders are about. Senator Ted Cruz is with us because he's been about that in a variety of ways as of late. And Senator, welcome and thank you so much. How are you doing?
Mark, my friend, good morning.
Good morning to you. Listen, there are a lot of things that it seems like a kind of a downtime, a dead time, but it's a busy time. Let's talk a little bit. Let's talk ventilators. Let's talk about preparedness, and then we'll get into some private sector stuff, some pro-business stuff, and focusing on our way out of this. But how are we doing? I mean, everybody's focused on masks, ventilators, this and that. Take us on a tour through the things, the supply chains that you've been paying attention to.
Well, we are facing an unprecedented crisis, and in fact, we're facing two crises simultaneously. We're facing a public health crisis that is growing, that is dangerous, that is serious, and that we need to defeat. We are also facing an economic crisis. We're seeing economic devastation spread as a result of the policies government has put in place to defeat the public health crisis. Both of those are extracting an enormous and terrible toll. I think our priority needs to be defeating the public health crisis. All of the economic consequences are flowing from that public health crisis. And when we defeat that crisis, we can move back to the robust economic growth we had just a couple of months ago. I believe there are four priorities to defeating this pandemic. Number one, testing. It needs to be much more widespread. It needs to be more accurate. I've laid out specific steps to the administration we can take to move in that direction. Number two, protective gear. We need protective gear on the ground. Our first responders need it. Our healthcare workers need it to keep them safe. Number three, critical medical equipment, things like ICU beds, things like ventilators. We look over at a nation like Italy where the crisis overwhelmed the socialist healthcare system they had there. There were simply too many people sick and dying for the capacity they had. And in particular, ventilators, the machines that help those with very serious respiratory illnesses breathe, they ran out of them. And so they had to make terrible triage decisions of deciding between one patient and another which patient lives and which patient dies. I don't want to see the United States healthcare system having to make that decision. So we need to be surging resources into building ventilators now. And it takes a little bit of time to build a ventilator. So if we're looking at crisis levels of very sick and dying in 2 to 3 weeks, we want to make sure we have all the ventilators we need so that we can provide life-saving medical care. And finally, fourth, we need to be accelerating medical research and development towards a vaccine, towards an effective treatment, and ultimately towards a cure for COVID-19. And I filed legislation to streamline the FDA approval process to move us quickly to curing and defeating this disease.
So those four, again, testing, protective gear, critical medical equipment like ICU beds and ventilators, and medical research and development for the path out of this. We all understand why there's an FDA. And if we're talking about shooting stuff into our veins and popping stuff into our mouth, I want to be extra cautious to make sure that the negatives don't outweigh the positives. We understand why it takes time for certain drugs to make their way to the market. Tell me your thoughts on the fast tracking. Obviously, everybody's all obsessed on the hydroxychloroquine story. And was that handled well? And is this, are we maybe learning? Are we learning maybe one of the many 500 lessons of the shutdown that maybe we've been too careful and there's been a cost to that?
I think there is absolutely a cost to that. Look, conservatives should not be surprised to discover that government bureaucracy is slow and cumbersome. That is true with every government on the face of the planet. It's true with every large organization on the face of the planet, that is the nature of bureaucracy. When it comes to the FDA, there's a second component that has often been the case, and it's an idea that's called agency capture. And we see this across governments, again, across the world, where if an agency regulates a particular industry, that they will often become captured by that industry. In other words, their focus is on preserving and protecting the big market players. How does that play out in the pharmaceutical world? Well, right now, it is so difficult to get a new drug approved at the FDA or to get a new medical device approved that it can take years and it can take billions of dollars. That has a number of predictable consequences. It means the only players that can devote billions of dollars of R&D are the giant pharmaceutical companies. It makes it very hard for new entrants to compete in that space, number one. Number two, it focuses on where the R&D is directed, because if it's going to cost over $1 billion to get a new drug developed, you're not going to invest in areas where there's not the potential to make over $1 billion. What that means is we dramatically underinvest in rare diseases. Just in the United States, here is an amazing stat. There are 30 million Americans who suffer from a rare disease. Now, not all the same rare disease, obviously, then it wouldn't be rare, but different rare diseases. And the systemic problem we see is because the barriers, the cost to approval are so high, we don't get the research we need and how to cure and how to treat those rare diseases. I have for a long time championed legislation to reform how the FDA does its approval. It's called the results legislation. And what it says is it's structural change. It says if any pharmaceutical, if any medical device is approved in another major developed country, in Europe, in Canada, and again, that the FDA has 30 days to approve it here. It doesn't make sense. It isn't right. Right now, there are people in the United States who have terrible diseases who can get treated abroad, outside of this epidemic and crisis in normal times, can get treated abroad with medicines that are approved in Europe, and yet the U.S. makes it illegal to sell here. That doesn't make any sense. If you are sick, if you are dying, you have a right to try. You have a right to act to save your life. And so I do think one of the positive consequences of this crisis is that we are seeing some of these bureaucratic processes be streamlined, and I hope that principle will follow through, not just during the crisis, but going forward as well.
Senator Ted Cruz is here. I have come to understand and even embrace the $2 trillion that I know we didn't have, but we somehow magically find when times are urgent enough, and this certainly seems to meet that description. What's your thought about the methodology by which the checks are going to go out and the people who get them and the criteria and the means testing, the whole thing?
Well, look, you're absolutely right that spending $2 trillion is extraordinary, and it's terrifying. I mean, that is about 10% of our national debt, which we spent in one day. And in ordinary times, that would not have happened. The reason it did is these are extraordinary times. This crisis, by the way, we were going to pay for this crisis regardless. The choice was simply, how do we address it?
Yep.
And I supported this. It passed the Senate unanimously, 96-0. Every single Republican, every single Democrat voted for it. Bernie Sanders voted for it. I voted for it. And everyone in between voted for it. And the reason is this crisis is profound from a public health perspective and from an economic perspective. Millions of small businesses are going out of business or on the verge of going out of business. Millions of people have been unemployed. This bill, I don't call this bill a stimulus bill.
No.
This bill was a relief bill.
It's not a bailout. It's not a stimulus, because I don't even oppose either. This is a rescue. This is a flat-out rescue.
That's exactly right. And if you look at the different pieces of the bill, one of the most important you just referenced is the individual relief. Right now, every American in the country who makes less than $100,000 a year will be getting a check from the United States government. If you make $75,000 a year, each adult will get a check for $1,200. And for each child, you'll get a check of $500. That means a couple that has three kids and that is making less than $150,000 a year as a couple will receive $3,900. That is real money, and that is designed to be there for people who are hurting, who may have lost their job, who may be scared. How am I going to make the rent check next week? How am I going to buy groceries for my kids? How am I going to pay for my daughter's orthodontist bill? This is emergency relief direct to people who are hurting. You asked, how is it going out? The Treasury Department is distributing it. They have projected it will take 2 to 3 weeks to arrive. If the IRS has your bank information, if you normally get your refund through a direct deposit, the IRS has projected that those direct deposits will be faster. They may be as soon as April 8th. That's what the general counsel of the IRS told me, is they are trying to target those direct deposits by April 8th. If they don't have your bank information, if they're sending a physical check, printing those checks and getting them out will take longer, but what Congress specified is make it as fast as humanly possible.
A couple more minutes.
Those are on the way.
A couple more minutes with Senator Ted Cruz. I like affordable prices at the gas pumps as much as the next person, but the oil industry is taking it on the chin, and the Saudis are not helping. Did you and some other senators get into a conference call with a Saudi ambassador about this? What are they doing, and what should we know about it?
So the Saudis are doing enormous damage to us. I joined with 12 other senators. We sent a letter to the Saudi ambassador, and then we had a phone call with her that was as candid and bare knuckles as any conversation I've ever had with a foreign leader, where we said, listen, Saudi Arabia is screwing the United States and it's screwing Texas, that we're in the middle of a health crisis, a pandemic, and at the same time, the Saudis are flooding the market with oil, trying to drive down the prices and trying to bankrupt Texas shale producers. They're trying to put the Texas oil and gas industry out of business. And that is nothing short of economic warfare. I and the other senators made clear that if they're going to behave like our enemies, they should expect to be treated like our enemies, that they need to stop trying to just be opportunistic thieves attacking America at a time of crisis. I can tell you that message was heard. I think it was heard loudly. I pointed out the 13 of us are consistently the strongest defenders of energy and oil and gas in the Senate, but also have historically been the strongest allies to the Saudis. And you know, the Saudi defense is, well, Russia's doing it. And my response to the ambassador, I said, look, Russia's our enemy. We understand that. They behave like our enemy, and they're treated like our enemy. You're supposed to be our friend. There's no state in the union that does more business with Saudi Arabia than Texas, and you are not behaving like a friend, and you sure seem to want our help when it comes to a military conflict or anything else. Well, you need to decide, are you with us or are you against us? I hope they make the right decision on that.
Last thing with Senator Ted Cruz, I so look forward to getting back. I mean, normal life will mean we can go get street tacos and a margarita. Normal life will mean we can take our kids to various places. And normal life will mean we'll settle down to what's looking like a Trump versus Biden election on November 3rd. And when we're talking about that, we'll know that life is kind of back to normal. The Democrats right now, with a convention in the middle of July, are talking about maybe not having that. Republican convention isn't until August, like last week of August. I want the Democrats to have their convention because it means we're back to normal sooner. I can't wait for the show material that a Democrat convention will give me. But let's talk a little bit about the weirdness of the entire campaign. I mean, Trump's on TV every day. Joe Biden has vanished from the planet. I understand that. The weirdness of this political year under these circumstances.
Well, this is the equivalent to being in a wartime, much like it in wartime. This has become the dominant issue, how we defeat this public health crisis, how we defeat this economic crisis. And it's not complicated that that's going to play the decisive factor in the election, that this is impacting everyone's life. But let me give you a moment of hope and optimism. You're saying getting back to normal. Despite all the devastation, there is an enormous silver lining to this crisis, which is it is forcing all of us to be at home, to be with our families. You know, I'm at home. I'm working from home every day. Heidi's working from home every day. Both of our girls are doing school distance learning from home every day. We're having every day we have lunch together, all four of us. Every night we have dinner together, all four of us. In the evenings, there's nothing you can do, so we've started making it a pattern of going on a family walk every evening right around dusk. And I got to say, walking out in the neighborhood, everybody is walking in the neighborhood. Now, everyone's staying 6 feet apart. They're social distancing, so you cross on opposite sides of the street. But it's like Mayberry. I've never seen my neighborhood like this.
There you go.
It's wonderful that people, you take your dogs out and you're happy and you're in the sunshine. And if you can't, you can't go out, you can't go to a movie, you can't go to a restaurant, you can't do anything except spend time with your family.
Right.
And I will say that opportunity is truly a gift from God. In the midst of all of this suffering, in the midst of all of this misery, the opportunity every day to be with our families, we will be grateful for that forever.
How many, since you are so busy, you and Heidi and your family is so busy, how many people in your neighborhood did not in fact know you live there? How many times you went, oh my God, it's Ted Cruz?
You know, it's interesting, actually. A lot of folks, I mean, our neighborhood, we know each other pretty well. And there are a lot of kids on our street and we walk around. But, I mean, it's the entire neighborhood is out walking, all separated by distance. But it is a wonderful, it's like being, you know, we live in central Houston. It's like being transported to a small town 75 years ago.
It's great.
It's wonderful.
It's so great to focus on the silver linings, because when we return to normalcy, I hope we're a more grateful nation. I hope where our priorities are reordered, we rediscover family and discover or rediscover God. We can talk about ventilators and protective gear all day, and we should, but we also need the Lord himself through this. And just listen, and these briefings are heavy with policy from the White House every day. I think each one is a masterpiece, a big sloppy masterpiece. Just like this entire presidency. Did you catch what happened to Mike Lindell when he dared to speak these words after he talked about, we're going to be cranking out masks at MyPillow, doing our country a great favor, and oh, by the way, maybe let's rediscover our families and rediscover the Bible. And he got torched for it.
Well, you know, I got to say, I think in some ways it may just have been a brilliant move, because it so triggered the mainstream media.
Yep.
To see someone who loves America and will talk about the God and Bible and the Bible in a positive way and the president in a positive way, the media all went into fits. And maybe it was just a brilliant ploy, because none of those media reporters or executives are going to sleep well tonight.
And so that
means that maybe they're so upset they're going to go buy a new pillow. So it may work out in the end.
Exactly. Our promo code Mike G for my buddy Mike Gallagher. Listen, best to Heidi and Caroline and Catherine. Enjoy those walks. And I hope the day comes really soon when you're doing it because you want to and not because it's the only thing you have the option of doing. But thank you for the leadership and being with us. I know we'll be talking soon.
Well, thank you, Mark, and we will make it through this together. America's strong, Texas is strong, and we're going to come through this.
Senator Ted Cruz, 827, Mark Davis, 660 AM.
As she rises to her apology.
Wait a minute, Mark. You resent the Michael McDonald Doobie Brothers, don't you? I do. This is, in fact, the only great record ever made after a Michael McDonald run. But on April Fool's and our fool-related thematic, you gotta do What a Fool Believes. So, hey, Mike, there you go. Throw him a bone, man. Alrighty, here's what I believe. I believe it's time to get into the newsroom, and then I believe it's time to take your calls and find out what you believe about stuff going on. It's 866-660-5759 on the phone, 833 Mark Davis, Gordon Griffin in the newsroom. There we go. Speaking of fool, for April Fool's Day, discovering tunes with fool in the title. George Strait.
I told her I wouldn't miss her at all as she walked to the door.
Written by Dean Dillon and actually performed by him, but it's George who made it a big deal in 1988.
I couldn't care less if she didn't care anymore.
The first release off the wonderful album If You Ain't Lovin', You Ain't Livin'.
And with tears in my eyes, I lied. I was glad we were through.
It's going to be our first quarantine sing-along. Maybe we need to do that every once in a while. Ready? Hashtag quarantine sing-along to Great George Strait. Famous last words of a fool. You ready? Come on.
Last words of a fool.
Don't worry, I'll keep myself deep in the background.
Famous last words of a fool. Famous last words of a fool.
Come on, don't be shy.
You won't break my heart, and I don't love you. Famous last words of a fool.
I'm having the best time. I mean, look at these great records I'm able to roll out just with the common theme of fool. It's Fog Hat Fool for the City. How much fun was that? Steely Dan from their first album, Can't Buy a Thrill, and Only a Fool Would Say That. And I know, what a fool believe. I mean, he had to do that. I know for a fact, just thinking ahead, that I will close the show today with one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite songwriters. And I love her so much, but you're not familiar with her for the most part and probably have never heard the record. But here's my chance to do it. Why? Because of the fool thematic that we've all stumbled across. Boy, you know what? George Strait, right? Famous last words of a fool, which he performed at the opening of Dickie's Arena in Fort Worth on November 22nd. I remember that well because it was Lisa's birthday. Quite the present for quite the George Strait fan. And that's the normal life of going to an actual concert. But just every day some new thing occurs to me that's not happening anymore. I mean, we were looking at, I hope we're able to do Alanis Morissette rolling through town with the 25th anniversary of Jagged Little Pill. She's coming with Liz Phair, whom I love. I was going to do that for Lisa as well. Because, boy, I mean, she just has the Jagged Little Pill, every cut of that thing. You know, I think it's her favorite album ever by anybody. And it's probably top 20 for me as well. But that's June 14th, I want to say. And here, I'll be really, really honest with you. Let's say life is kind of back to semi, sort of partially normal as May progresses. Is my bride going to be cool with, you know, hopping into under a canopy with 18,000 people in the middle of June? I don't know. So we have a certain level of comfort that we're going to have societally, governmentally, as the policies start to roll out that say, okay, we can reopen restaurants, or then reopen churches, and then are we going to have sporting events with no? Are we going to have sporting events with no fans first, where things roll out in a gradual way, such that we end up getting baseball, we end up resuming basketball, and please God, let this be wrapped up before football gets knocked out of the park by it, because all the players just want to play. Players want to play, and it's funny. I'll never forget this also seems like forever ago. Remember when LeBron James was in the locker room and they were talking about, you know, before the NBA just shut down so fast a few Wednesdays ago? I'll never forget. It was the Wednesday night. They shut down the NBA season. That's when I turned to Lisa. We were out to eat. Remember that experience? And I said, honey, you realize I'm doing a talk show tomorrow, right? Came back from vacation. And the adventure thus began. But LeBron James famously said, I play for the fans. If there ain't no fans, I ain't playing. I'm going to guess he's come around on that because we will be so ready. The Mavericks, man, doggone it. Luka and Kristaps and other players whose names we actually can pronounce are going to they could bring us our second NBA championship. They really could. They are that good. And if it means I've got to endure the weirdness of hearing the squeak of their sneakers, yeah, they're wearing sneakers, the squeak of their shoes on the American Airlines Center floor because there are no fans in the building, then so be it. I'd watch that tomorrow. Baseball in an empty stadium, or as it's known, the Tampa Bay Rays. Kidding, sorry, that was easy. So when we're all back to that, I think we're probably going to have, because I think there'll be a level of comfort where if teams are comfortable with it, players are comfortable with it, we can put X number of guys out on a basketball court, out on a baseball field. That's a whole nother smoke to talk about, putting 15,000 people, shoulder to shoulder in an arena. So I think we're going to roll this out pretty slowly. And, a baseball thing and then a George Strait thing because there's a coronavirus story. Well, let me do that so you don't think it's George. It's not. But it's Ray Benson. Ray Benson, legendary Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel, has tested positive for COVID-19. So every prayer lifted up for Ray Benson. John Prine is getting a little better. Great songwriter, Angel from Montgomery, great Bonnie Raitt record. Just go get the first John Prine record, a song called Hello in there by John Prine, one of the greatest things he ever did. He was critical, and now he's just in serious condition. So, folks, I hope that everybody that has it can improve. But Asleep at the Wheel opened for George Strait. And when Lisa and I walked in, we were, a couple minutes late. Heaven forbid. Oh, we did another crazy thing. We went out and ate at a restaurant. Oh, what's that like? And so we got to the Dickies Arena. It was our first time walking into Dickies Arena. It was everybody's first time walking into Dickies Arena, just about. And what beautiful facility. Can't wait to crank that out. Crank that up again and be able to go to concerts again, go eat again. All those normal things, they do lie ahead. But that was, I guess, my third time seeing Asleep at the Wheel. Always so great. And their guiding force, Ray Benson, has tested positive for COVID-19. So let's send every prayer up there. Now, here's the thing I'm just obsessing about baseball and the Rangers, because they got to figure something out. They've got to figure something out, because yesterday, about 40,000 of us, because I would have been among you, would have experienced one of the most memorable days. One of the most memorable days in DFW history. And I don't just mean sports history. I mean DFW history. How often do we open a brand new stadium? The opening of Texas Stadium, 1971. The opening of what was then Cowboys Stadium, now AT&T. The opening of the AAC. How often does this happen? A few times per lifetime. That's it. More often these days, now that perfectly good stadiums get obsolete after 25 years, Rangers. But, I'm pretty well over that, because it would have been incredible yesterday. Sunshine, 66 degrees. Baseball. Hope springs eternal. Everybody's undefeated on opening day. Probably would have had some type of military flyover, and we would have seen the planes, too, because the roof would have been open because it's sunshine and 66. And, of course, come August, when it's sunshine and 105, even for the beginning of an evening game, close the roof and crank up the AC. There is something to be said for that. And it would have been the beginning of our relationship with the amazing squillion-dollar Globe Life Field. Well, it's there. It's ready. Baseball ain't happening. So what does happen to ticket holders for that chunk of history? If this is my worst problem, it's a great day. But are we going to get screwed? I'm not a season ticket holder. I know some people that have like the 20-game package. That's kind of cool. But at some point, the Rangers will open play at that new stadium. And at some point, people will walk into that stadium for the first time ever. Does somebody who just happens to be an accidental ticket holder to some series against Seattle or the Washington Nationals in interleague play, are they going to just have history land in their lap? Whereas everybody that bought a ticket to opening day, and listen, maybe if you got one of those from StubHub or something, that might have cost you $400 for an average seat. Wah, 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 sorry. That game got moved. Ugh. Well, I guess that would always have been a possibility if we'd had like a rainout or something. And we're not going to have any rainouts at the new stadium because it's got a roof. So anyway, it matters large and small. Matters large and small. Those are the kind of things that occur to me. Now, let me reshuffle because I think I really want to go in a little bit of a deep dive with you on this. And that's what to do about the school year. I often talk about the concept of when your heart eats your brain. When there's something that you say because you have feelings and empathy, and by the way, feelings and empathy are very good things to have, but sometimes when that guides you and you shut your brain down, not good. And sometimes you got to balance out the intellect and the heart, okay? So what to do with these kids in a school year that, let's face it, is gone? I had a small soliloquy and then took a brief call, and it perfectly shaped the two sides because I'm sitting here thinking about what about a kid? Well, let me shut up. I'll shape it up for you to finish this hour. We'll cruise into the 9 o'clock news, talk about the premise I'm about to lay out for you. And who knows, maybe five or six other things that we can shoehorn in to today's program. 2 hours down, one to go. Blessed to have you here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. 8:51, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The answer. Okay, I'm fudging a little bit on this one. Because here on April Fool's Day, with songs that contain fool, form of the verb, foolin', get it? Does this work? I think it does. I make the rules. I am the law. I'm the Judge Dredd of talk radio now. All right, enough of this nonsense. From Pyromania, 1983, Def Leppard. Doggone it, man. Doesn't get any better than that. All right, more fool songs, more foolish things from me, and we'll see how you stack up. Here's the premise. I'll do it extremely quickly, head into news, and then straight to your calls. Not the only thing we'll do in the 9 o'clock hour, but this is the one that's right here in front of my face. This school year is gone. It's wiped. We're done, right? 95% chance that's true. So if your kid was passing on, you know, the first week of March, hey, congratulations, you get to go to the eighth grade, you know, the next or whatever. Or, hey, you get to graduate, right? I mean, hey, what are you going to do? What if your kid's failing? What if your kid was just failing by like 1 point or just abject failure? My thought is maybe this is the year where nobody fails because it just doesn't seem right. Just doesn't seem right that your kid's chance to, you know, get his you-know-what together during March and April and May is just evaporated. And you didn't know it. He didn't know it. And it just so my heart says, let it go. But is that just – and then a guy called and said, basically bowed up to me and said, hey, talk show boy, we're either a meritocracy or we're not. And I literally asked him, I said, so you're telling me that if a kid was failing, has no chance to redeem himself during the last couple of months of the school year, that's just tough. You have to repeat eighth grade, or that's just tough. You don't graduate. His reply? Yep. Whew. You solve it. 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 858.